Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
From our studios at KUOM, on the West Bank of the University of Minnesota campus, this is Culture Q, the art show that rocks. This week on Culture Q, Animal Crossing. Good evening and thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Mark Sheely. Just as important as the relationship we have with other people are the relationships that we have with the creatures around us. They can give us companionship, others food, and sometimes disease and even death. So tonight we're bringing you stories on the wildlife in our lives. But first, a story from producer Tess Weinberg on the Northern Spark Festival, one which celebrates the city of Minneapolis by encouraging festival goers to think and wonder through a night of citywide art viewing.
It's a dusk to dawn art festival, so we begin at 9 p.m. on Saturday, June 9th, and end at 5:26 a.m. on Sunday, June 10th.
It's a different kind of 9 to 5.
The 9 to 5 when you're normally sleeping. All right, my name is Sarah Peters, and I'm the Director of Public Engagement for the Northern Spark Festival. And that means that I work with a lot of different people to help make the festival happen, primarily our partnering organizations.
They're working with 52 cultural partners to put this event on.
Northern Spark is an all-night celebration of art, technology, community, and the city.
Part of the goal is to create unique art experiences.
Create unique art experiences in normal places like galleries, but then to also put art where art normally isn't.
There are 5 zones and 120 pieces of art that span across Minneapolis and St. Paul.
By over 200 artists presented in 26 venues in partnership with 52 cultural organizations.
All centered around one river.
Yeah, the river is, I think, an important conceptual component to the festival. Several of the artists that are doing projects around the Stone Arch Bridge area talk about being inspired by the river. So an example of that would be the signature project of the festival is called Think and Wonder, Wonder and Think, which comes from Dr. Seuss in letters that are 8 feet tall that are going to hang off the side of the Stone Arch Bridge to highlight that iconic architecture with a piece of text that we think really captures the spirit of Northern Spark. It's infused with the sense of magic and possibility throughout the city in the middle of the night.
Hey. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Hold on. Let me just finish cutting.
Oh, yeah. Please.
I walked into the studio, and the artist of Think and Wonder, Wonder and Think, Robin Schwartzman, was cutting some industrial wire to hang the 8-foot letters over the Stone Arch Bridge.
So then you're going to use the wire to hang?
Yeah.
My name is Robin Schwartzman, and I'm an adjunct instructor and CNC router technician here at the University of Minnesota.
And you're an artist?
I am, yes. I'm also an artist.
They shouldn't with all this, but I did. That's why.
My piece, Think and Wonder, Wonder and Think, it spans giant 8-foot illuminated letters across both sides of the Stone Arch Bridge. And they're lit by 4,510 LEDs.
How many light bulbs are there?
4,510.
Each letter weighs about 200 pounds, and so there's 28 letters in total, and again they spell out this Dr. Seuss quote, think and wonder, wonder and think, and the letters will hang between the arches on both sides of the bridge. I've been working on a couple other smaller pieces here and there, some drawings and smaller sculptures, but this is kind of my baby right now.
After months of working and help from friends and people in the community.
So what are you hoping the reaction will be?
I'm hoping for a lot of smiles, and I really want this piece to be accessible for a broad audience, because it's not going to be just gallery goers who are going to see it. It's going to be the entire city, and so little kids can appreciate
grandparents,
it.
Grandparents, businessmen, students, anyone.
Yeah. This piece is really about the city and about community and kind of bringing people to the river to celebrate Minneapolis and what it has to offer.
The tools that you should bring with you for your night, primarily, I think the primary tool is a sense of adventure.
You can plan your night. Northern Spark has created many tools for you to do so. Or...
or you could just sort of set off on a path and see what happens.
Thinking and wondering about places that a lot of us see almost every day seems impossible.
That's a good question. One of the sentiments that came across very strongly in the surveys that we did last year, spoke to this notion of Northern Spark creating a feeling that this is the city we deserve, which is not to say that all the rest of the time Minneapolis is a city that we don't deserve, but it created such a sense of wonder and awe.
Peters says that it takes all of the wonderful things about Minneapolis, its cultural resources, the people, the river. And
the festival highlights all of those things and brings them into a sharp focus at a time when we are normally asleep.
For more information about the artists, the art, or amenities,
things such as bathrooms, food vendors, bike stations,
you can go to northernspark.org. For Culture Q, I'm Tess Weinberg.
Animals can be friend or foe, and in our question of the week tonight, we focus on the latter, with new reporter Octavio Obeya asking, what's the biggest animal you think you could fight?
The biggest animal I could fight with my bare hands would be a turkey.
A dog.
Maybe, like, a manatee? They're really slow and gentle, right?
I wouldn't even attempt to fight my cat, Tony.
I'm gonna have to go with a raccoon.
I think I could fight off a tortoise.
Probably a beaver.
A bear.
Oh my gosh, a dog?
Honey badger, all the way.
You know, I think I could take a dolphin if it wasn't fully grown, but it's a pretty risky choice, I know.
Let's see, how about a kangaroo?
No.
Look at that. You know, I could totally fight a kangaroo.
I don't know. A dog? I don't know.
That's perfect.
Venture onto the estate of someone who's recently passed away, and you can find some pretty strange things, like Sabrina.
Who's a tiger? We actually just got Sabrina 2 years ago.
This is Tammy Theus, founder and executive director of the Wildcat Sanctuary in Sandstone, Minnesota, home to over 100 exotic and indigenous cats that have been rescued or simply brought there by owners who can no longer handle that once cute and cuddly, now fully grown 500-pound tiger they bought. And when they arrive at sanctuaries like Theus's, these cats are in rough shape. Sabrina was no exception.
She had been there 10 days without food and water. She was pretty aggressive. Very, very fearful of people.
Theus first became a wildcat activist after seeing firsthand the poor treatment of some animals through her work in the advertising industry.
And I had actually seen a lot of animals used in entertainment. And one group in particular, I couldn't believe that people that were bringing tigers and leopards and lions into a studio didn't seem as knowledgeable as I thought somebody would be.
You may remember actress Tippi Hedren from her role as the avian-attacked damsel in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Well, it was through her later work as an animal rights activist that Theis was prompted to set up the Wildcat Sanctuary.
And she said, I was doing is great, but the more and more education and tighter restrictions we get, the more animals that always need homes, and their sanctuaries are bursting at the seams. So if you really want to help, why don't you open up another facility that can accommodate some of these animals, that really need homes and that we can tell their stories about and get further action done.
Since the founding of the sanctuary, it's been home to wildcats both surrendered by owners or seized by authorities. And there's always a need for homes for these cats, what with the tiger population alone in the U.S. estimated to be over 10,000.
They're not in zoos. They're in people's backyards. They're at farms. They're in people's basements. So it's getting out of control here in the United States.
Theis says that while many wildcat owners start out small, owning just one, they often buy more, becoming exotic animal collectors.
So then they get a license. They're not biologists, zoologists, or anything like that. They're private collectors that have gotten enough pets that require a license, but they still don't have the skills or the housing usually or even the veterinary care that these animals need.
I'm Dr. John Bailey. I'm the medical director and owner of Cedar Pet Clinic in Lake Elmo, Minnesota.
Bailey is also medical director at the Wildcat Sanctuary and sees the spectrum of conditions that the cats there arrive with.
Many of them are malnutrition. They're very poor diets. They're frequently, even with the Bengals and also with the bigger cats, they frequently don't have any veterinary care. So they have a lot of dental problems, particularly in the big cats. They have a lot of structural problems because they're frequently kept in inadequate housing.
Their past treatment also takes a psychological toll, as Theis says was the case for Sabrina.
And Sabrina, it took us about 30 days to be able to even walk up to her free-roaming area and her not charge the fence.
Differences between state, county, and city laws also make enforcing exotic animal ordinances much more complicated, as Bailey explains about Minnesota's own law banning wildcat ownership passed in 2005.
There was a grandfather clause that if you had one of these cats, you could register it with the state and they would make no legal action against you. The problem is that for many, many of the owners, they weren't being legally held in the county because the county had ordinances against them, and so people didn't register them. So there's still an awful lot of illegally held large cats in captivity in Minnesota.
Another example can be found in the cold-blooded. Dan Nijelic, animal control manager for Minneapolis, explains the city's own exotic animal ordinance.
Minneapolis City Ordinance 74.50 indicates no person shall keep or allow to be kept in any place in the city any wild, exotic, dangerous, or non-domestic animal or reptile.
So no reptiles of any sort.
And you know everything that's a reptile, that's turtles on up.
Yet just across the way in St. Paul and as well in Bloomington, owning some reptiles is allowed. Nijelic does say that the city has considered changing the ordinance.
I know it's a conversation, but it has not moved forward for an ordinance change to allow, non-venomous and non-dangerous reptiles in the city of Minneapolis.
To get around the law complications concerning wildcats, the activist groups that Tammy Theis works for are pushing for stronger measures.
We're working on a federal bill right now to hopefully get passed that would kind of blanket the entire United States and ban future breeding of these animals.
In the meantime, the best that people like Theis can do is take in what animals they can and encourage others to, as she says, keep the wild in their hearts, not in their homes. And as for Sabrina the tiger?
Sabrina has blossomed amazingly. Sabrina plays with toys now. We caught her swimming the other day, and so she's come a long time, but it's been a lot of positive reinforcement.
For Culture Q, I'm Mark Sheely.
I think we can both agree that summer is a great time of year and all are happy. We're all enjoying the sun and the weather and we get to go out on the beautiful Mississippi. But with summer comes some not-so-awesome pests, and Alex and I, myself, Bree, are here, and we're going to talk to you about the top 7 pests of summer, according to us.
Yeah, I got to say, summer is great and all, but there are just those little things that can really get to you and drive you crazy. One of my number one, just most annoying things ever is, right, you know, right after finals, right after the school year, it's getting those grades back.
I know. And you wait forever.
Yeah, it can either that or they come right back and you see how badly you've done right off.
Or how good.
Or how good, yes. Obviously, my grades are not the indicator for everyone else. Just remind you that, no, school isn't quite left you alone yet. And it's just, you're trying to relax, you're trying to enjoy yourself, and
there's that underlying itch of you just want to know how you did, but the teachers don't.
It just drives me up the wall.
Yeah. So that was our number 7. I think for 6, we can all say that sunburns are a big thing for Minnesotans because we like to think that we can get a nice base down, but let's be honest. For everybody, getting a base is getting burned horribly the first time. And from there, you can kind of get tan.
Absolutely. My lily white skin just fries like a piece of bacon. I have never been tan in my life.
Some people are lucky. You know, we're a melting pot, so I have some of that, like, olive skin, so I'm okay, like, after the first initial burn. But my roommate's Polish, and she just gets lobster every single time. Poor thing.
I'm the exact same way. My family's from Eastern Europe, too, and it just never got into me.
Well, how about our 5, Alex?
Well, another thing that drives me up the wall that I discovered rather recently in my own apartment was a nice little ant infestation. It's never really comforting walking into your kitchen trying to, you know, just make yourself a sandwich. And there's a bunch of little black things scurrying along the countertop.
Every summer, my kitchen, they're on the walls, they're on the island, I don't know how they get there, and we try to spray, but nothing happens. What scares me the most is, did you know that ants, if you kill an ant and leave the body, the other ant people will come and pick up the carcass, and it will no longer be there. They take their dead back home. How terrifying is that? Yeah. But for number 4, we're going to say that ticks are right up there with being a noisy pest. Just because I like to go out in nature. I like to go hiking, and I hate that when I have to get home, I have to check for ticks. And they're saying that this is going to be the worst season because we had a mild winter and a really wet spring. So make sure, people, that you, if you're going hiking, check for ticks. They're bad for you.
Or you'd be like me and just remain indoors all day.
You could do that too.
But I'm me, you're you, so do whatever makes you happy. However, another reason why I tend to remain indoors is our number 3 problem, and that's the blazing humidity that often results in summertime.
And which can also result in really bad body odor on the bus.
Yes, no deodorant, no antiperspirant is ever good enough.
No.
In the bad summer heat, they just, you apply and you apply, but they just don't work.
And I wish it wasn't so humid, but I'd rather have the bodies of water, I guess. It's a catch-22, you know?
It is. It really is.
But what's not a catch-22 is our number 2 pest, which is allergies. I know personally a lot of people that suffer horribly who just want it to rain so that all the pollen could get knocked down from the trees. And have you seen the little wispy white?
It's like a snowstorm.
It's like snow. You look like if you're driving down the road in like woodsy areas and you just see piles of this white fluff from dandelions, it looks like snow.
It is.
Even in summer, we can't get away from it.
But let's face it, the most ridiculous, most annoying pest that plagues Minnesota, made Minnesota notorious, the mosquito.
Yes, the disgusting, annoying, pestiest pest of them all most definitely is the mosquito.
Sucking your blood, making you itch, being found by the thousand per...
Ugh. Carrying Lyme's disease, nobody wants that.
They're just everywhere, and... So- Another thing that you can never kill enough of to make them go away. They will hunt you at night, buzzing right close to your ear.
You can never have enough salmonella candles or bug spray. They're just going to come for us.
They are. They're the true owners of Minnesota. Yeah.
Well, there you have it, folks. Thanks so much, Alex, for counting down the top 7 pests for me. For Culture Q, I'm Bree.
And I'm Alex. Yeah.
this the ODB kid. New radio version for you. Call shame on the new. So everybody, watch out on
it. Well, it wouldn't be summer here at Culture Q without these stories about exotic animals, garden pests, and all that summer fun, but we must not overlook one of nature's most important insects, the honeybee. Todd Crotty brings you up to date on the ancient art of beekeeping.
You wanna get gun? Shoot! Blah! How you like me now? Don't front the style, ruthless, wow! Do you wanna get your teeth knocked on now? Wanna get on it like that? Well then shout! Your RZA, your razor, hit me with the major. The damage, my clan understand it, be flavor. Gunning, coming at you.
My name is Stephanie, I live in Richfield. And I call it Tiny Happy Urban Farm. I have chickens and a big garden and fruit trees and bees.
Stephanie is among a growing number of Twin Cities apiarists, or individuals who raise and maintain honeybees, for a number of reasons.
Just the satisfaction and the learning and interest of watching them is an end in itself. But pollination for my garden is totally a wonderful side benefit. And then, of course, honey.
But more goes in and out of a beehive than just bees and honey. In fact, it's quite complex. And if you were to peer inside of an active beehive, Stephanie explains a little of what you could expect to find.
The pollen, as far as I can tell, they just stick it in the hole in the hive.
Wow.
So if we were to pull out one of those combs, you would see some that look like they're full of yellow stuff and red stuff, because they're finding red pollen somewhere. And in other holes, we would see capped brood that we were seeing a little bit when we looked in there. That's baby bees. In others, we would see larvae. So you can actually just look in the hole and see a little worm in there, and that's a really baby bee. In others, if you have good eyesight, you could see eggs. And then eventually there will be honey, which I think is more like from nectar. And they suck it up and bring it back and spit it out into a hole, and then they fan it to dehydrate it until it's honey.
Joining us at the hive was Chris, a bee enthusiast from Minneapolis, who in just 2 years of having a hive of her own has learned a lot about the nature of bees.
And that's a female doing a waggle dance.
Oh cool. Yeah, she's waggling away.
She's probably telling everyone to go to that rose bush in your front lawn.
Incredible. Of course, the three of us were outfitted in beekeeping apparel to keep the bees out. But as Chris points out, honeybees aren't like the other sort of stinging critters.
In general, beekeeping isn't that dangerous. But if somebody were allergic, say, and they ran into the hive and knocked it over, they might get a lot of stings. But bees are pretty docile unless you're in their hive. So right now they might get a little aggressive because we've got the hive open right here.
But of course, well-kept bees make happy bees. And the design of Stephanie's beehive makes this experience even more unique.
This is called a top bar hive, which is really unusual to most people in the United States, but it is more ancient overall. In this hive, they have no template and they're building their comb from scratch, and so they're able to build it more exactly to their specifications, which makes them better able to ward off mites and other things that bother bees.
Predators to the honeybee include the parasitic mite Varroa and the trachea, a wax moth that occupies bee colonies, eating cocoons, pollen, and literally chewing through the beeswax. But there are still more threats to bee populations in the Twin Cities, and as Charlie O'Brien, a representative of Richfield's Department of Public Safety, points out, the threat often comes from city government.
Our ordinances right now, the way they stand, list which animals are considered domestic animals and which are in tents, which ones you're allowed to keep. And bees are not a part of that list, so we say no when people ask us.
Well, I just went ahead and got bees in Richfield. I think some people thought my yard would now be full of bees, and people with allergies couldn't come here or whatever, but once you see it, really a pretty low profile thing and less of a big deal, I think, than most people think.
So before you go building your own beehive, it's a good idea to check with the city you live in first. Bill Stevenson, St. Paul's Animal Control Supervisor, filled us in on what a potential beekeeper in St. Paul should be prepared for.
Well, they do have to apply for the permit.
And some of the rules are you can only have one hive per every 2,000 square feet of space you maintain. There are some fencing or enclosure requirements. It's got to be high enough to where it allows the bees to take a vertical flight path. And that's all in the name of safety, you know. So we kind of were tasked with, you know, protecting kids from being kids sometimes. So we want to make sure the safety factor's there.
Already we've touched on what goes in and out of a beehive and what a resident must be prepared for if they want a hive of their own. But you've got to get your supplies from somewhere.
My name is Douglas Fuller, and I do as little as possible.
Well, I'm a king bee.
I'm a beekeeper. I'm a farmer. It's not a hobby or a business for the faint at heart. It needs a lot of attention.
Doug is Cannon Bee Honey and Supply Company's third owner, and for more than 20 years, he's been offering bee packages, beekeeping equipment, and other supplies to get today's beekeeper off the ground.
To get started in beekeeping these days, you can probably look to spend anywhere from about $300 to $500 to get started with one hive.
But for Stephanie, Chris, and Doug, it's not about the money that keeps them coming back to the hive again and again.
A taste of honey, tasting much sweeter than wine.
It's not difficult, and it's pretty rewarding, especially at the end of the year when you bust your buns and you pull off all your honey supers and you start extracting the honey, and that first flow of that liquid gold comes out of your extractor is, you know, it's a thrill.
Bees are from my bees.
Yeah.
Minneapolis honey. Minneapolis honey.
Wow.
For Culture Q, I'm Todd Crotty.
Well, that's all for our show tonight. This week you heard stories from Tess Weinberg, Octavio Abella, Alex Mertens, Bree Hansen, Todd Crotty, and Mark Sheely. Producers for Culture Q are Zach McCormick, Tess Weinberg, Mitch Skinner, and Noel Clark. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek, and host and managing editor is me, Mark Sheely. You can find Culture Q on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And if you miss something fascinating, you can always find recent episodes of Culture Q online at radiok.org. Thanks for listening, and as always, see you next week. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.